coming in here. Hello?
This is the White House, Mr. Metzger. I'm calling from the office of the President, and he'd like to talk to you.
The President of the United States wants to talk to me? Mr. Obama? Oh, that's hard to believe.
Well, he's heard you play songs for people, and you talked to BB yesterday, and so he wanted to request one of his favorite songs because of his great speech the other night on the State of the Union.
Yeah, I didn't get to hear that speech, but a lot of people said it was pretty good. And so that's okay with me. Are you going to put him on?
Yes, I'm going to put him on right now.
Okay. Mr. Metzger, this is the President of the United States, Obama, Mr. Obama, Barack Obama. Good morning. Well, how you doing, Mr. President? I'm quite shocked that you would call a lowly person like me, especially being white.
Well, I talk to white people once in a while, because remember, I'm half white.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm so thrilled over my speech about the Union the other night that I heard you play requests.
Yeah, I do play requests once in a while for people, and I didn't get to play Hagila for BB yesterday, but I'm going to do it in the future. But what would you like for me to play for you, President, Mr. President?
Well, this goes back into the 50s, man. Do you remember the 50s?
Oh, I remember them quite well, yeah.
This was my favorite song from the 50s, and I play it in the Oval Office in the well, I go in the bathroom and play it because Michelle hates this shit. But here is my favorite song, and I would appreciate if you would play it for the President of the United States.
Okay, what is it?
It's, now don't laugh. It's Alley Oop.
Alley Oop, Mr. President. Boy, I remember that song. That's a fun song. I'll play that for you today, and I hope you get to, you're just as happy as hell when you hear it, okay?
All right, Mr. Metzger, I really appreciate that, and if anything I can do for you here at the White House, I mean the Black House, well, just give us a call, okay?
I sure will. Okay, goodbye.
Bye.
There's a man in the funny papers we all know. He lived way back a long time ago. He don't eat nothing but a bearcat stew. Well, this cat's name is Alley Oop. He got a chauffeur that's a genuine dinosaur. Knuckle your head before you count too far. He got a big ugly club and a head full of howl. Like great big lions and grizzly bears. He's the toughest man that is alive. Wearing clothes from a wildcat's hide. King of the jungle jazz.
Look at that caveman go.
He rides through the jungle tearing limbs off of trees. Knocking great big monsters dead on their knees. The cats don't bug him cause they know better. Cause he's a mean motor scooter and a bad go-getter. He's the toughest man there is alive. Wears clothes from a wildcat's hide. He's the king of the jungle jive.
Look at that caveman go.
There he goes. Look at that caveman go. Ain't he? Like what's happening? He's too much. Right, daddy, right. Hi, yo, dinosaur. some man like him, Bill. You know. Ooh, wow.
Well, we're getting the show off to a damned exciting start here, man. I'll tell you, it's really good. Terrible Tommy in the bunker here, and I was thrilled to talk to Mr. President this morning and talking to these world leaders like in BB yesterday. But I question whether that was really BB, because it didn't sound quite like BB. I think it was one of his Mossad agents talking to me there, yeah. So anyhow, this is the 30th of January. I think there's 31 days yet in this month. And it's Thursday, and we're still right here at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And spread the word about the radio show and get us some more subscribers on here. And we can do more projects. How about that? Well, let's go to the mailbag first. Yeah, we got one in here from a prisoner. Tom, big greetings to you from the big house. I received your copies of Brown Header. I believe that's the way you pronounce it. I would really like to receive the whole book. Could you send it to me? Please, I really like that book. Also, ask if you could please send me a couple of old papers. Like war or insurgent. Well, yeah, we are sending quite a few of those out now. We've got a few hundred here in the bunker. They go all the way back to the mid-90s. And so we're beginning to send those out. He says, I received the new order. And if you have any white rock and roll CDs, you could send those as well. Me and a couple of comrades enjoy the books you send and the papers. We would really like some music. No tapes. They have to be CDs, screwdriver, anything like that. Anyhow, Tom, today is Martin Luther for Coon Day, and we have to suffer due to all the coon shows on television. Well, take care, Tom. Send my best to John, too. Okay, well, that was... That was from a prison on the West Coast, and I got a whole lot of these CDs that are just sitting here. I'm not too much of a Oi fan, I mean, you know, but people have sent me samples for years, and I've got them sitting here, so I didn't know that you could send CDs into a prison. Maybe some you can, some you can't. But anyhow, I'll send some of these CDs out there to them. And I'm sending out an update on all the activities of different groups around the world that came to me over the internet. I forget who sent it to me. It's about 20 pages, and it's mostly about Europe, but it's a lot about the United States, some about the United States, too. I think I'm even mentioned in there, so we're sending that out because some of the guys complain that they don't get up-to-date news. And what we should do is when a hot story, I mean, not something that's in the news every day, but I mean something that they're not likely to read or from some other source overseas or something, just photocopy the master and you can run some copies and send it to prisoners. And if it's something really good and you don't think they might have had it, you send me a master of an 8.5 by 11 or 2 or 3 pages and... I can copy it, send it to him, too. Well, here's another one. Let's see here. Another letter. Hello, Mr. Metzger. I've been listening to your show for a week, and some of your guests use derogatory terms to describe colored people. Well, I don't know. If I was a Negro, I think I would object to colored people myself. I am glad that you are more mature concerning this. I feel we don't need this mentality to get the point across. I am a proud man, and I will always be this way. The terms used are perceived by new listeners as savage. we as Aryans are above this silliness. Otherwise, sir, I very much enjoy your show. A fan in the making. I also live in Indianapolis. If you're ever in the town, hit me up and we'll get together and have a sandwich or a beer. There you go. Enclosed fine 2 months subscription. Well, thank you, RJ. I don't think I go overboard with it, but I get perturbed that other races and other whites call us all kinds of names 24 hours a day. And I didn't use the term nigger for the first, I think, almost 40 years of my life. But I became so upset with the shenanigans of the black race that I felt it needed a little bit of derogatory. Because the problem is everybody's afraid. They're in fear of saying anything off color. And I don't think we should have to be that way. We should be able to speak however we feel anytime we want. And I know a lot of right-wing shows, they talk about, oh, it's terrible. They heard somebody say nigger. And now I guess it's, what is it? What's the latest? Thug. Well, for a while there I was using crimes. You know, I sort of like N-word. I think that's a pretty civilized way of describing them because it doesn't sound like nigger, but you know it is nigger. So anyhow, I don't use these terms as an intellectual adventure. It's simply that I am not afraid of the black race, and they piss me off. And their leaders they always apologize for anybody that's black who does anything. And so, do I go around calling every black person nigger? Of course not. Do I even, if I see some of these baggy pants bastards downtown, I don't run up and start calling them nigger, but I do believe they need to be referred to with disrespect, because I don't respect any race that won't criticize itself. And there's almost no black person that will criticize a black race. I heard him on the radio last night on a black show, and a black was calling in, and he was going on and on, and not Obama's fault, and Obama's wonderful, and all that. And this one guy, this black guy, is an honest guy. He got in there, what are you talking about? Obama's screwing us and told all the bad things he's doing. He wasn't going to leave up on him because he was black. Well, then there's that. There's a black preacher. He calls them Mac Daddies. What do you call them? Black Mac Daddies and stuff like that. So, anyhow, I don't want to run you off, but I'm certainly going to refer to them now and then in a derogatory manner. And just to let them know that we are white men and we'll say whatever we want, anytime we want, anywhere we want, if we choose. So, anyhow, I hope that is good enough for you. I mean, what are you going to call people that are raping your women and pedophiling your kids and filling the streets with drugs and crime and holdups and car chases and everything else on 24-hour day? I mean, within a few miles of me, there's black crime every day, every night. What are you going to call people like that? Misguided? No, I can't call them misguided. I won't call them, normally I wouldn't call them animals. I think a more respectful term would be nigger or negro or what else, Thanks to JNR for your contribution, which is definitely appreciated. Got it today. Well, I just happened to think, I wonder if Obama would like this song I'm going to play for you. And now that we're offending everybody, let's offend some more people here today.
Let me tell you about Ahab, the Arab, the Sheik of the Burning Sands. He had emeralds and rubies just a-dripping off of him, and a ring on every finger of his hand. He wore a big old turban wrapped around his head and a scimitar by his side. And every evening about midnight, he'd jump on his camel named Clyde and ride silently through the night to the Sultan's tent, where he would secretly meet up with Fatima of the Seven Veils, the swingin'est number one dancer in the Sultan's whole harem. Cause like him and her had a thing going, you know, and they've been carrying on for some time now behind the Sultan's back. And you could hear him talk to his camel as he rode out across the dunes. His voice would cut through the still night desert air, and he'd say, oh, yeah, 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 oh, yeah, put your there and make foot. Whoa, babies! And Clyde say, well, he brought his camel to a screeching halt in the rear of Fatima's tent. Jumped off Clyde, snuck around the corner and into the tent he went. There he saw Fatima laying on a zebra skin rug, with rings on her fingers and bells on her toes and a bone in her nose, ho ho. There she was, friends and neighbors laying there in all her radiant beauty, eating on a raisin and a grape and an apricot and a pomegranate, a bowl of chitterlings, two bananas, three Hershey bars, and sipping on an ROC Coca-Cola, listening to her transistor, watching the Grand Ole Opry and reading Mad Magazine while she sung, "Does Your Chewing Gum Lose Its Flavor?" And Ahab walk up to her and he say, oh yeah, 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 oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, which is Aramic for, let's twist again like we did last summer, baby. And she say, crazy, baby. All of a sudden, the Sultan walked in. Ahab knew that this was the end. Him and Fatima was caught by surprise, and the Sultan had fire flashing out of his eyes. Well, the Sultan charged at Ahab, intending to make a dent in his head. But he fled with Fatima, and out of the tent they went. They jumped on Clyde and started to ride, cutting out across the sand with the Sultan's whole army in hot pursuit. On and on they ran. Well, to make a long story short, they got away, cause there weren't no animal alive what could keep up with Clyde once he got started, cause he would have swept his steed on the old desert baby. And they made it across the border where he had popped all his rubies and emeralds, and they bought him a swanging little split level pad and lived happy ever after. Yeah. And that's a story about Ahab, the Arab, the Sheik of the burning sands. Ahab, the Arab, the swinging Sheik of the burning.
Well, I guess there we've offended another billion people, maybe more. yeah, Ray Stevens, I like his stuff. Yeah, he's a funny man. He's been around for quite a while. Well, we've been talking about water for a long time, and it's gradually creeping up on us. The lack of 17 rural communities in drought-stricken California are in danger of running out of water within 4 months, according to a list compiled by state officials. Now, I hear the same thing from down in Texas with the same problems, and probably in a lot of other places that I haven't heard of. Wells are running dry or reservoirs are nearly empty in some communities. Others have long-running problems that predate the drought. The communities range from the sea or from the area covering the tiny Lompico County Water District in Santa Cruz County to the cities of Healdsburg and Cloverdale in Sonoma County. And the San Jose Mercury News reported today, most of the districts, which serve from 39 to 11,000 residents, have too few customers to collect enough revenue to pay for backup water supplies or repair failing equipment, the newspaper reported. A storm expected to drop light and moderate rains on Northern California on Wednesday and Thursday won't help much. The list of vulnerable communities was compiled by the State Health Department based on a survey last week of more than 3,000 water agencies in California. So there you go, and it's I don't see any end in sight with this water shortage, and people better start worrying less about oil and more about water. Here's a little bit on the lease situation. Prosecutors had filed, of course, 7 counts of felony terrorizing against the men, which is obviously absolutely obsessive, even if it were true. I mean, even if there were misdemeanors, each of which carries the potential of 5 years in jail and $5,000 fine. Because Dutton pleaded down to misdemeanors, he was sentenced to time served and 2 years probation. Judge Donald Jorgensen, obviously mugging for the cameras, defended his decision not to expunge Dutton's criminal record after he completes probation, telling CBS Sacramento that he has to understand, as an adult, you make decisions and there are consequences. Well, his worst decision was going to Afghanistan. Any young guys that are going over there voluntarily are out of your goddamn minds. So, anyhow, Dutton's lawyers had argued that the Iraq veteran had been misled by Cobb. Dutton had moved from Oregon to join Cobb's white enclave and had been allowed to live rent-free with his children on the property. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the way it goes, and that's why Lone Wolf works best. You notice how no one ever explains what this so-called hate crime in Canada was? It had nothing to do with anything violent. It has to do with free speech. But they don't want to say that, you see. That's how these progressives work. They only tell half the picture. Oh, he fled Canada, you know, like he'd robbed a bank or something. Sadly, this information came from the rawstory.com. And, of course, they swiped it from somebody else. But these guys have banned me from making comments on their website. So only the other side has heard on Raw Story. And they are always complaining about the right wing. Right wing's horrible. Right wing this, right wing that. They turn around and do the same things that the right wing does. Taking a swipe at Doug Christie. Not Doug Christie, but... Christie, the governor of New Jersey, Bill Maher, the funny man, he said GOP was wary of Christie after he got Kenya cooties hugging President Blakula. Yeah, there you go. That's pretty racist, isn't it? But that's okay in Ross' story. But Tom Metzger making a legitimate comment isn't. Did you hear that story about some congressman or senator? I guess he was a federal congressman, said that they ought to put a fence around Detroit, make it an Indian reservation, put all the Indians in there, and then throw corn and blankets over the fence to them. That allegedly happened here in the last few days. Have you heard that one? Boy, he's in hot water, man. I don't know whether you've seen that Cheerios ad of the mixed-race couple, which accurately shows the black husband. But anyhow, on Wednesday evening, MSNBC's official Twitter account sent out a message about a Cheerios ad featuring a biracial couple, adding their own editorialization that, quote, the right wing will hate it, unquote. After outcry about a cable news network posting such a message, MSNBC apologized and deleted the tweet. Quote, maybe the right wing will hate it, but everyone else will go, ah, the adorable new Cheerios ad with biracial family, unquote, the tweet read, with a link to a story on the commercial. Well, I'll tell you, it's a... I'm glad they're putting those commercials on more and more. Shove it in their face. Shove it in Whitey's face. Well, you know as well as I do that black leaders are supposed to be able to calm the maddening seas and calm the storm. But this Atlanta mayor, who appears to be dark in color him Negro, seems to have a problem keeping his weather under control.
Are not of the city of Atlanta.
Okay, Mike.
They're of the highways, and
Mr.
you
Mayor,
all should point that out.
Good, I will point that out. I will point out that the highways were a complete mess. As far as we know, a woman had to give birth on one of the highways. Lord knows whatever else. We obviously learned from the George Washington Bridge scandal that we've covered so closely here that when a highway is impeded in any way, emergency vehicles can't get where they're going to go. And aren't the people who work in your city the people who are on that highway who should have never even come in,
one? Well, first
what is
of
your
all,
responsibility that, in that, this? And by the way, sir, the highway issue, who's to blame for that? Name some names. We'll call them.
I think that it's a fair criticism. What I said is that we made a mistake, and I said it immediately, that we made a mistake by not staggering the release of our citizens to go home. So I said on yesterday that we should have had a protocol where our elementary schools are released and parents with elementary school children, and then our private sector businesses followed by government. So I think there's shared responsibility for that, and I certainly take my part of the blame for it. Regarding our highways, the point that I was pointing out was when you say the city of Atlanta, I think it's important that you be accurate. We had a challenge on our highways because we got 1 million people out, and then we had a very bad snow event. But you started by talking about 2011, which was a 4-day snow event, and we had the city of Atlanta functioning within 24 to 30 hours. We had 0 fatalities. We had about 14 significant traffic incidents, and that wasn't represented in the coverage. So I will certainly take my part of the blame for that, but the images that you're showing are of the highways, and I care about those folks.
We worked very
hard to try to get so many of those out, but there is no one stranded in the city of Atlanta.
But, sir, you don't have any conversations with the Department of Transportation, the commissioner?
Absolutely. We certainly did.
Where was your leadership with saying I-85 goes right through directly the heart of Atlanta, or 400 or I-20 all through the heart of Atlanta?
You know what I mean?
With the Department of Transportation, and you're talking with the commissioner, and you're saying, well, sir, I can't get my citizens safely home off of these roads. What are you doing? And if in 2011 you had this major write-up about the lessons learned in humility, that's just a little over 2 years ago. Where was the protocol learned from 2011 that would be enacted for this?
Yeah, who left you hanging?
The protocol was that by 9 a.m. we had our de-icing machines on the street. We coordinated with the governor's office, we coordinated with the National Guard, and we got all of this apparatus up and functioning in a 6 to 12 hour period rather than the amount of time it took before.
So, Mayor, let's look forward.
We're not engaging in a blame game here, but I do think that when you show the kind of images that have been shown of the city of Atlanta, that it ought to be accurate.
All right,
Mayor, let's look forward.
No, say we get another freak storm like this 2 weeks from now. How is it going to be different? If you're saying that you're not responsible for the interstate and you can't tell the schools to close because that's not your responsibility, how can you correct that in 2 weeks?
We will correct it by putting in place the protocol that I just discussed.
But then you had that protocol in place before this storm, didn't you?
No, that's not the case. The fact of the matter is we have an independent school system in the city. We have the independent state government and an independent municipal government. I think we need to work much harder on coordination, and we certainly will, and I acknowledge that. So in the future, what we're going to do is we're going to develop a protocol to get our children and parents out of the city faster, to get the private sector businesses out of the city, and then government, hopefully at the state level, but certainly at the civil city level, would go last. And that would work to prevent the kind of jam that was caused by this severe weather event. I think that we all have responsibility in terms of who screwed up.
So are you responsible
I shared what I was responsible for.
Yeah.
I said I think we should have made a different judgment about how we released our citizens as we got 1 million citizens out of the city. But what I do want to clarify is the images that you've shown as you talked about Atlanta were often photos that were not in the city, and that the streets in the city were
80%
It's just not helping you. But thank you for coming on the show. We'll be right back with much more Morning Joe.
Well, there you go, boys and girls. Another half-educated Negro that's got affirmative action education, Kasim Reed, he took on an African name. And let's go back in time to when we were warned about all this and see if you remember this.
So that when you finally do wake up, why, we're sorry, but it's just too late. Only too well, friends, that the quickest way to cripple a country is to mongrelize it. So they poured all the millions of dollars the Jews could get for them into this one thing, desegregation. They went to the courts. Now, Judge Silver, who is a Jew and is known to have leftist leanings, the record says so. Look it up. Abraham Silver, for one thing, belongs to the Quill and Pen Society, which receives its funds indirectly from Moscow. So what did the judge do? Went right ahead and ordered integration for the Caxton High School. So, I guess the Patrick Henry Society has studied the whole thing. The real problem, whether you like it or not, is whether you're going to sit back and let desegregation spread throughout the entire South. And it's an indisputable fact that there could be no other result. The Negroes will literally, and I do mean literally, control the South. The vote will be theirs. You'll have black mayors and black policemen the way they do in Chicago and New York already. Like is not a black governor and black doctors to deliver your babies. If they find time, that is. And that...
Well, what were you doing back in the 60s if you were born? Were you joining in with the South, the Southern whites, to protect the country and to turn this thing around and not allow this black race to become your mayors and governors and senators and like this bumbling mayor of Atlanta? What were you doing? I know what most of us were doing. We were criticizing the South and saying, oh, it's terrible, the South. Well, it's come back in spades, so to speak. Come back in spades. You're going to reap what you sow, white people. That's right. Oh, yeah, an addendum onto that Dutton case. Because of his finagling around and pleading out, he's managed to get his Second Amendment rights taken away from him. Cowards never win. In the end, they never win. Well, if you don't like Jewish arrogance, just read the Bible. We know that's all true. Yes. A guy asked on the internet, he says, what else do you think the Jews want to control? Sounds like a neo-Nazi conspiracy theory. Well, I think the Jews did invent a lot of that stuff. The answer by the Jews is the fascistic aspiration towards the greater Israel is no conspiracy theory, but is predicated on the biblical imperative. That's it, man. It's the end. Everything. And that's what most of these Christ insanity people believe, and Christian Zionists and Jews and everybody. It's in the book. Yeah, right. Would you work on your car if you had a manual that was printed 1,000 years ago? The Bible, contains 3 geographical definitions of the land of Israel. The first, found in Genesis 15, verse 18 to 21, seems to define the land that was given to all the children of Abraham. Well, wait a minute. Wouldn't that include the everybody, the Gentiles, the Arabs, and everybody? Including Ishmael, Zimran, Jokshan, Midian, and so on. It describes a large territory from the brook of Egypt to the Euphrates, unquote. Comprising all of modern-day Israel, the Palestinian territories, Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, and Iraq, as well as Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Oman, Yemen, and most of Turkey, and all the land east of the Nile River. So there, the Jews want it back because the book says so, and the book never lies, men. You want peace in the world? Get rid of the Talmud, get rid of the Jewish writings, and get rid of that Holy Bible. Yeah, that will give you peace in your lifetime.
An end of the Mediterranean in northern. We have all heard of the Sea of Galilee. It is to be found at the eastern end of the Mediterranean in northern Israel. Oddly, no one at the time of Jesus had ever heard of the Sea of Galilee. To the Jews, it was the waters of the Gennesaret. To the Greeks, it was Lake Genesar. To the Romans, Lake Tarachea. And after they destroyed that city, Lake Tiberias, named for the emperor in Rome. The inventor of the name Sea of Galilee was the author of Mark's Gospel. The fact that he gave a new name to the lake and called it a sea is a clue to Mark's method and purpose. He was not reporting the history of real events. He was presenting a set of ideas relating to suffering and ultimate salvation to the distraught survivors of catastrophe. His message, that God's power is limitless, was given dramatic form by being imposed onto a topography that had never known his meandering hero nor witnessed his mighty deeds. Mark is untroubled by the restraints of place and distance. His terrain can in an instant be mountain, river, desert or sea. Jesus the Christ, at an earlier stage in his evolution, had graced merely a heavenly realm. But now he moved on earth, in a landscape transformed by his presence into sacred space, resembling, but never actually being, the geographic reality. Mark's revisers, Matthew, Luke, and John, would, by degree, refine and reform the original design. But it could never be made to quite fit. The anomalies would remain as unresolved mysteries. And for 17 centuries, Christians would labour to make the canvas fit the real world. The ministry of Jesus meanders around this so-called sea. In the first century, the lake was smaller and shallower by several metres than it is today. Two thriving Roman cities were on its eastern shore, Hippos and Julias. On the western shore were the mainly Jewish cities of Tarachea and Tiberias. But not one of these four real cities gets a mention in the fable of Jesus. Instead, the author of Mark sets his Jesus tale on the short northern shore of the lake, where other supposed cities are the hub about which the Jesus story revolves. We are talking of villages within 1 hour's walk of each other. In fact, most of the significant Jesus events take place at or close to the village of Capernaum, including calling of his disciples and performing his most notable miracles. Yet Capernaum was a small place in the 4th century and a tiny hamlet in the 1st. This one donkey village is apparently where many thousands gather to see, hear and touch the great exorcist. Jesus, we're told, taught the multitude on the shore with parables while seated in a boat. Several times he took ship across the pint-sized sea, though most famously on one occasion he dispensed with the boat and walked on the water. Curiously, the points of departure and arrival have always eluded precise location. The country of the Gergesenes, or is that Gadarenes, or even Gerasenes? The Gospels have all three. Then there's that enigmatic desert place, located in the most fertile part of the entire region. there's the second Bethsaida in Galilee, conjured up to make the gospel narrative somehow make sense. The fabled city of Dalmanutha and the unknown coasts of Magadan. What we have here is fiction, the fabrication of a Christian Holy Land. It's not only the characters of the gospel story that had no real existence, even the very places of Jesus' mighty deeds are mere fictitious overlays on the true landscape. It's more astounding rubbish from the New Testament.
But I've got all the ammunition I need here to knock down all this crap. The people who put this Bible together are the biggest bunch of liars and exaggerationists the world has ever known, writing hundreds of years after the supposed fact that was nothing but a myth and a legend in the first place. And these people have the whole world convinced, oh, this is Israel, this is our place, and our great heap God gave it to us. I mean, the whole fabric of society, especially when it comes to religion, is built on nonsense, fabrication and lies. And of course we can thank these early conspirator so-called kikes or hebarus or whatever you want to call them with all this craziness that leads us over and over into wars and millions of people dying as a direct result of that holy book, that crazy book. It should be outlawed as being pornographic, much too violent. No child should ever be allowed to read the Bible. At least you should put a warning like on cigarettes that it's not healthy to read this stuff until you're at least 21. And then you better have tongue in cheek all the way. How are you going to talk rationally to someone who believes that men rose from the grave? They haven't risen from the grave since biblical times, and they didn't arise then. And some people say, well, that was just Jesus. No, there was a lot of people back then, they said, rose from the grave. I want all these Christian preachers to line up in front of my house or in the backyard and see how much faith they have, because I want to put a slug right through their forehead, and I'll bury them out there by the creek, and I'll wait for them to arise. And the first one who arises, I'm going to follow him till I die. In fact, I'll go one step farther. Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, the way it's peddled today and packaged, is a giant criminal conspiracy. And unless the world can get out from under this nonsense, I don't think it can ever straighten itself out. Well, I had a story here about the Jehovah's Witnesses, but I think I remember most of it. I mislaid it, but you know, there are 20 million of these Jehovah's Witnesses around. You know, the kind that come around your front door, and the one where you appear naked when you open the door, like Tom Likas did up in California. He's a talk show guy up there, and he said the only way you could get rid of the Jehovah's Witnesses was go to the door naked. And I think that's a pretty good idea. Well, they recruited an army of Mexicans. Now, before I left California, they had them all dressed up in suits. You know, they might have just come across the border, not even taken a bath, but they take them down to the Goodwill and put them in a suit and a tie, and they're going around trying to convert other illegal alien wetbacks to the Jehovah's Witness, and they've got an army of those now. Well, in California, they got a guy, I think his name was Loomis or something like that. But anyhow, he was sort of a big shot in the Jehovah's Witness in Southern California. And Channel 10 covered this story in depth in an investigative report, to where he'd molested hundreds of kids. Yeah, Chester the Molester. He's a Mexican. Yeah, but the bottom line on the story is, did he go to prison? Did he go to jail? No. The Jehovah's Witness didn't give him up and helped him get back into Mexico to where he could find other little kids to molest under the color of Jesus. and the Holy Spirit. Oh, Jesus. Oh, man, the amount of molestation that has gone on over the last hundreds of years must be absolutely enormous. Must be. We used to hear rumors about it, but, you know, at least now it comes out a little bit into the open. What causes these pious religious people to become pedophiles? Now, what is that all about? Well, I guess it's access and having the power, you know. See, when you have too much power, well, then you get away with things or try to get away with things. And so if you're in the church and the church is, you know, really semi-secret and they keep a lot of the things to themselves, and you have the power and you have all these little children coming into the Sunday school and so forth, you have opportunity. That's what leads to the pedophilia. They have the opportunity and the desire, and then they get the protection, like the Catholic Church does, protecting all these pedophiles and only being giving them up when forced to by the law that you're going to go to jail. So anyhow, so much for religion, so much for Christ insanity and Jew insanity and Islam insanity and so forth. Well, I didn't want to bore you with this religion stuff, because it surely bores me, but you got to know about it. How about this? The way of the rabbi. The Israelites did not come from Egypt, a palpable myth, but emerged from the local population. There was no ancient Jewish empire. The Jewish priests drew their inspiration from the empire of the Assyrians, and Judaism was a reaction to the loss of the northern kingdom and an instructive period spent in Babylon. Yahweh, the God fashioned by the Jews, in other words, created by the Jews, was a brutal tyrant, a being with a humanoid personality and a disturbing bloodlust. Say hello to G-D. With God's blessing, misogynistic Jewish scribes encoded a raft of sex crimes which sanctified racial ambition. The sacred mission was to populate and subdue the earth. Judaism bequeathed its unfortunate mix of ignorance and intolerance to a wayward faction of heretics known as to the world as Christians. Jerusalem in the 10th century had been barely a village of huts and cave dwellings. Now they want the whole world. King David and Solomon are purely mythical characters, warrior priest heroes invented in the 6th century B.C. Temples on the Mount, from the threshing floor to noble sanctuary, Persians and the Greeks, Greeks bearing gifts, Herod's temple, Factor Fantasy, Temple of Juniper, biggest and the best, Herod versus Hadrian. It's all mythology. Herod the Great was a real king, but he did not massacre any babies. He was an astute and successful ruler. The Herodians and the Jewish elite became romanticized, but religious fanatics led by an armed resistance, which ended in catastrophes under Titus, Trajan, and Hadrian. In the aftermath of a collaborationist revision of Judaism, later attributed to a 13th century apostle Paul, allegedly of the impeccable Pharisaic credentials, competed fiercely with a reconstructed rabbinic Judaism which fused piety with mercantile success. End quote. End quote. That's what this bunch of ragtag idiots and BB and all of them are prepared to destroy the world over something that never really existed, other than a bunch of rag merchants living in these little villages. And you should read that book, and I'll send you one free if you want one. Send me, a dollar or two for postage. That's the book Horace Saves. I've got a lot of them left, and they're good. They're really good. It's only about 100 pages. Conquest by Religion. Evan Arthur McCallum, who did a good job on that booklet, and he does it with humor to show how really it's funny. But it's horrible at the same time, how this ragtag bunch in the Middle East created what has turned out to be a Frankenstein monster. I mean, so you send me a couple of bucks for postage, I'll send you one. You should give them to your Christian friends. Oh, I don't know. It's probably a waste of time. Anytime you try to give one of these Christians something that has any reality to it, they say, "Oh, I just drove in the Bible. It's just the Bible, man, the Bible."
The counselor advised an informal setting, adding that it is, quote, an effective way to build a better relationship. That sounds like advice that a love counselor might offer to couples, but not so. This relationship is about money. The counselor is a lobbyist for the healthcare industry, and he was explaining the art of wooing Congress critters by paying several thousand bucks to spend a weekend with them at some posh resort in Vail, Key West, or other luxury getaway. By holding what are called destination fundraisers outside of Washington, lawmakers and lobbyists can spend quality time together as they ski, snorkel, and schmooze. It's a way to get some large chunks of a lawmaker's time, oozed the lobbyist, who had recently enjoyed 3 days at the Four Seasons Resort in Vail with five Republican House members, two of whom are on the committee that writes our health laws. But wait, wasn't there a big stink over golf junkets a few years ago, forcing Congress to prohibit lobbyists from paying for these back-alley affairs? Yes, but Washington believes that where there's a will, there's a workaround. Here's how this one works. The lawmakers' political committees pay for their travel, food, booze, and lodging, so these expenses, technically, are not gifts from lobbyists. In turn, the favor seekers come at their own expense, plus making legal donations to the members' re-election campaigns. The donations end up being three or four times the cost of the event, so the lawmakers pocket a nice wad of cash, while the lobbyists enjoy a weekend of making legislative whoopee. Since the donations and the event are considered, quote, separate transactions, it's all legal. See? This is Jim Hightower saying, neither do I. In fact, what I see is just another corrupt way for corporations to buy Congress. Who do they think they're fooling?
Well, that was a little double talk. It got doubled over there, but that was from this Sherman, this football player, Negroid up there in that helped win their team to go to Super Bowl. And I don't pay any attention at all to these football players and stuff like that normally, but let's see what he said. Now he's turning tables on his critics. On Wednesday, he responded to the many people who called him a thug for his behavior, saying, "The only reason it bothers me is because it seems like it's the accepted way of calling somebody the N-word nowadays." It's like everyone else said, the N-word, and like everyone else said, the N-word, and they said thug. And they're like, "Ah, that's fine." That's where it kind of takes me aback, and it's kind of disappointing. Well, he's telling the truth. I agree with him. White people are always needing a new code word for nigger. I mean, you know, remember all the terms we've come through for black people? You know, it started out, what was it? Negro, negra, and then it was negro, and it was colored people. And let's see, I forget there were some others in there too that I forget about. And then all of a sudden it's African-American. Now these terms, names are always picked by Jews or white people. And then the black people go along with it. Now, some black people are in the beginning, but most of this stuff is created by whites or Jews. Now he's saying that thug is just another word for the N-word. Well, of course it is when he calls this guy, who goes crazy talking to this white reporter. This is it. So thug is the new word. We don't need to say nigger anymore, all right? You got that straight? All right. I simply like to call them crimes. We have entirely too many crimes in Chicago. And there you, that way you, you wrap it up with getting two birds with one stone. You know, you cover the crime, you cover the blacks, the whole thing, by just saying there were 15 crimes in Chicago last night in a certain area. And, of course, everybody will know what you mean. And if they don't, you could say, and they were carried out additionally by thugs, man. Well, actually, that comes from the word thuggy, which was an Indian situation, a gang that was very effective at creating terrorism and murder. They creep up on you in a crowd and slice your throat or put a garrote around your neck and things like that, called the thuggies. They were a very powerful sect in India at one time, much more powerful than Al Capone. Maybe that's a compliment to black folk to call them thugs, from the thuggee, huh? Well, that's about it for today, boys and girls. I think I've offended just about everybody. Maybe not the Asians yet. I got to find some good stuff to throw at the Asians, and like no ticky, no washy, and stuff like that. So I'll be back tomorrow. Freya's Day, Ladies' Day in the bunker tomorrow. Yeah, lone wolf, she-wolf. Yeah, the above-average females. We'll see you tomorrow. Five words, and shut up. And don't talk in your sleep, either. I better get out of here, because I think there's some thugs trying to get at me. Whoa, some thugs are after me. I'm telling you, I got to get... Whoa. Wow. Run for your life. Run for your life. Okay, I give up. I give up. You see my hands? You see my hands? Come on. Whoa, God, that was a direct hit, man. I'll tell you. I think it got to Terrible Tommy's Tavern, you know? Whoa, they get me with another one. Ooh, wow. Okay. I got to get out of here, boys and girls. Turn off the TV, sat down to dinner. Phone rang, we were saying grace. Grandma died, left us 60 acres. The last of the old home place.
trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about